Welcome back for the second hour of the Spencer Wilson Show here on this Friday, September 18th. Happy to be with you. Big thank you to our pal Terry for again jumping on the phone with us there in the first segment. We'll have our pal, or in the first hour, we'll have our pal sacked man Rick Metz come in here later on this hour. We'll also talk about some racing news. IndyCar announcing a brand new race that'll be added to the schedule next season. And so we'll talk about that, as well as NASCAR out on the track this weekend, as well as some possible driver talk around a Formula One team. So we'll talk about that stuff coming up in the next segment. But first, let's start. I'm going to start with the NBA and NHL with some of the playoff games that happened last night, but did give want to give everybody a update on the U.S. Open going on right now at Winged Foot there in New York. Patrick Reed has jumped up to the lead at 4-under. He is through 12 holes today, he's through 12 holes today and is even, but he is up to -4 and is at the top of the leaderboard. Bryson DeChambeau is up 12 spots today as he is 3-under. He went 2-under today with a 68, had a 69 yesterday, so one stroke better today. He's now 3-under, and again, we got a couple guys also at 2-under with Rafael Cabrera-Bello there at -2, as well as Harris English is 2-under as well. So getting a little spread out there. I mean, really, from tied for fifth and down, this is a tough course. And, we expected that, but, I mean, again, just four golfers under par overall right now. And those are the four that I just mentioned. Patrick Reed, Bryson DeChambeau, Rafael Bello, and then Harris English are the only golfers that are under par. We only have, one, two, three, four, five golfers that are even. Everybody else, starting with Bubba Watson, who's tied for 10th, is at least one over. So Winged Foot challenging the golfers like a lot of experts expected. So we'll see who can possibly work their way up the leaderboard today, but Patrick Reed is currently your U.S. Open leader there at Winged Foot. So wanted to give everybody a little update there, but now let's talk about basketball. I mean, we got Nuggets and Lakers coming up tonight in Game 1 of the Western Conference Final, but we had Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Final last night and touched on it there with Terry in the first hour, but Miami once again just staging a double-digit comeback that just blows your mind. I mean, this team does it again and again this postseason. And let's not forget now, 10-1 this postseason. I mean, what a record, what a performance this team continues to have. And again, they were down by 14 in Game 1 to Miami. This game, they were down 17 in Game 2, and they still managed to come back. And of course, it was boosted by that third quarter where Miami outscored Boston by 20 points. In the third quarter, Miami outscored Boston 37-17. So obviously that was a huge catalyst in that run and in this win. But that's just, it feels like that's what Miami does. They kind of feel out that first half, and then they're just able to jump into that rhythm and just, you know, crank it up a couple notches. And all of a sudden, you know, they're little by little just closing down the lead. And before you know it, they're either, you know, within a couple points, they tied it up or they've taken the lead. I mean, with Boston, I think it was, a 60-47 lead? Yeah, 60-47 lead there at the half for Boston. And then again, mentioned that Miami outscored them 37-17, but that is just an absolutely ridiculous run by this team. And again, for them to constantly be able to make these double-digit comebacks possible, you know, I asked the question about Denver. They're down 3-1. When is it going to be the end for them? Same thing, if Miami's down double digits, how big of a double-digit lead do you need? I mean, I don't think we've seen anybody get over 20 points. I think it's been 19 a couple times, but maybe that's it. You know, if you can't get that lead to 20 points or more against Miami, at least that's what we've got to think, because we have these 15, 17, 19-point deficits that Miami just keeps coming back from. So it looks as though if you want to have a lead that is big enough to fight off Miami, it's got to be 20 points or more until we see them make that kind of a comeback. But what an absolute team effort from this Miami team. And that's what it's really been all season long. I've been mentioning that this Miami team and their team basketball is just absolutely incredible. And the runs that they continue to go on and just the way they continue to fight. And again, I mean, you just can't put a single word on it to really describe it. Watching Miami continue to fight is just amazing. And again, that third quarter was just an absolute just mind bender. I mean, you couldn't believe how Miami continued just to stifle Boston and then would get whatever they wanted on offense. Not that it was overly easy, but for them to make the kind of run that they did, I mean, it's just ridiculous. And again, this is a Miami team that's not doing it with one guy. It's not like they just give it to Jimmy Butler and say, hey, bring us back into the game. I mean, it's Butler, it's Dragic, it's Adebayo, it's Hero, it's all these guys that jump in and make this team so difficult to keep down. I mean, if you look at Denver, you say, oh, Denver comes back because Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic step up and play together and play great together and just bring that team and will that team back into it. With Miami, you can't point at one or two players specifically and say, hey, it's because of this guy or because of these two guys that they are able to come back and make this runs and hang around these playoff games. It is a full team effort from the starters to the role guys. It is a full team effort for Miami and just an unbelievable performance. Again, 106-101, and Boston got the lead back late. You know, once Miami went on their huge run, Boston in the fourth quarter went on a 15-2 run of their own and really kind of stifled Miami for about 7 minutes and were up five with just under 4.5 minutes to go. But then what happens? Miami, once again, finding those opportunities, finding a way, and here they are up 2-0 on Boston. And apparently, that led, because what, Miami finished the game on a 17-7 run. So again, Boston has their 15-2, but here comes Miami on a 17-7 run, and there you go. And that's the game. And that seemed to have caused, should we say, a passionate conversation in the Boston Celtics locker room. And a couple players, you know, had some comments about it. I mean, Kemba Walker tried to play it down, just saying it was nothing. Jason Tatum added to that the Boston was, you know, frustrated. You know, that's team sports. They're not supposed to be in a good mood down 0-2. But they just got to talk it out. And really, that is true, right? We forget these are human beings, and they are trying to win a championship. And sometimes when you are losing games like Boston has lost in this series where you've had double-digit leads and have been unable to finish the game out, that can be really frustrating, especially when you're this deep into the postseason and, you know, you just got to dig deep. And so I don't know if I would say it was nothing. It's nothing if you come out and play the next game and win it. I think if Boston has this kind of a locker room, you know, a heated locker room situation, they come out and have, you know, if game three goes the same way as the first two, if they have a double-digit lead and blow it, then I think we could have a little bit more of an animated conversation in that locker room. So it's nothing if Boston can turn it into a positive. If Boston can turn this game in that locker room situation, which, again, doesn't sound like anything major happened, just some, again, some passionate conversations going on. Didn't sound like anything got physical. But if you take that loss and you take that locker room conversation, you turn it into a game three win, then yeah, I say it's nothing. But if we start to see that frustration boil over on the court, guys calling other guys out, guys not picking each other up if they're on the ground or if they're having a bad shooting day, then I don't think it was nothing. And that may have been the beginning of the end of the Boston Celtics in that locker room after game two. But I think game three, if you're the Boston Celtics, is must win. You just can't go down to Miami 3-0 the way the Heat have been playing in this postseason. So I'm always hesitant to call a game three a must win, but if you're Boston, game three in this series is a must win, no doubt about it in my mind. And again, Eric Spoelstra, Terry and I touched on that as well. The way he's managed his Miami Heat team throughout the years and this season deserves a lot of credit. He got in his 81st career playoff win, which ties him eighth all-time with KC Jones. Also talked about that Miami third quarter where they outscored Boston by 20 points, and that differential is a Heat record for that quarter in the playoffs and the sixth time in Heat playoff history. They've outscored an opponent by at least 20 points in any quarter. And that's just how good this team can be. And, you know, even with the team they have now, they're just never done. They're never out of a game. And Gordon Hayward, with that ankle, remained out. And at this point, not sure what kind of difference that's going to make if he comes back. He's not going to be 100%. Who knows how dynamic he'll be able to be on that ankle. So, unfortunately, whether or not Gordon Hayward comes back, not sure it's going to make – well, actually, I'm pretty confident it's not going to make any kind of a difference for Boston in this series. It might be kind of a pick-me-up. Maybe he gets a couple shots to fall. But, you know, with the way that ankle got injured, the fact that it's taken him this long to get back – I don't see him being able to jump into a series, especially one with Boston trailing, and be able to add anything that's going to turn this around. So while it might be a nice, you know, personal victory for Gordon Hayward to get back out there on the floor, I don't know. I don't think it's going to make any kind of a difference to this series. And then a pretty cool moment here. Jay Crowder hit a three-pointer with 5 minutes and 43 seconds left in the third quarter. And that three-pointer from Jay Crowder was the 33,333rd three-pointer in NBA playoff history. That's pretty cool. That's a lot of threes. That's pretty cool for Jay Crowder to be able to have that and get it nonetheless in the third quarter as well. So just a fun little fact there from the game. Also, a bit of a scheduling update. They are going to have a little bit of an extended break between games 3 and 4. So game 3 will be played tomorrow, but game 4 then will not be played until Wednesday. So they'll have Sunday, Monday off after their game 3 tomorrow. I imagine that's to get both conference finals on a little bit more of the similar schedule, with your Eastern Conference essentially being 2 games ahead of the Western Conference. So I imagine that's just to get both conference finals essentially on the same schedule, so that when the NBA finals start, you're not going into a series kind of like the NHL is going into, when one team has had a day off and the other team's had about 3 or so days off heading into it. But such a fun game, another incredible performance there from Miami. And like I said, Boston game 3, it is a must win for the Celtics if they want to try to get back into this series. And speaking of the Stanley Cup final, that series does get started tomorrow with the Western Conference champion Dallas Stars taking on the Eastern Conference champions, the Tampa Bay Lightning, who about 5 years ago, when they were getting ready for the 2015 Stanley Cup Final, did not touch the Prince of Wales Trophy, which is the trophy given out to the Eastern Conference champion. This year, however, Tampa Bay mauled the Prince of Wales Trophy. So there you go. That can be kind of a superstitious thing in hockey, whether or not the team captain touches the trophy or not. Not touching the trophy did not work for Tampa Bay 5 years ago. We'll see if touching the trophy this time around does work for them. So Tampa Bay, a great game against New York. A lot of the action coming in the first period. Devin Taves, excuse me, for the New York Islanders getting the first goal, just about 4 minutes into the first period. Victor Hedman, a little more than 2 minutes later, gets the Tampa Bay Lightning even with one goal apiece. And the second and third period was just a knockdown, drag-out fight. It was physical. It had great goaltending by both teams. And it was just up and down the ice. It was a lot of fun to watch that grinded-out type of game. And, again, low scoring. Another 2-1 victory here in overtime. But what a physical contest back and forth that these two teams had there in the second and third period. And really throughout overtime as well. I mean, both teams getting some really good chances there in overtime. But Tampa Bay, Anthony Cirelli, for the third time this postseason, gets the goal. And not just any goal, but the overtime series winning goal for Tampa Bay. To give them the 2-1 Game 6 win, but the 4-2 series win over the New York Islanders. But what a showing from New York, a team that put together a very nice postseason run. They should be proud of the season they had. Barry Trotz, again, doing a great job with his guys there with the New York Islanders. But looking forward to Tampa Bay and Dallas. I mean, Tampa Bay is a team that has, since making the Stanley Cup final in 2015, they've been a very active team in the playoffs. Of course, last year having the collapse that they did, being the President's Trophy champions, then getting knocked out and upset in the first round. But they're looking like they're making amends for it this year. They're back in the Stanley Cup Final with that offense that can find a burst when it needs to against a team in Dallas that really has relied on its defense but has shown a lot of good offensive bursts in this series. So I'm looking forward to how Tampa Bay's attack, does against this Dallas defense. But I'm also interested to see if Dallas can keep this going. I mean, Jamie Benn, Alexander Radulov, Manta, Joel Pavelski. I mean, these guys are great weapons for Dallas. And I'm going to be interested to see how they do against this Tampa Bay team, how their offenses match up, and also how Dallas plays Tampa Bay there on defense. But I think it's going to be a really fun, entertaining series between these two teams. Like I said, Tampa Bay, first Stanley Cup final since 2015, although they lost that year to Chicago. I believe 2004 was the last time the Tampa Bay had won the Stanley Cup. That was against the Calgary Flames. But Dallas back in the Stanley Cup final since 2000. So this will be a fun matchup between these two. And again, game one of that series gets going tomorrow with the puck drop at 4:30 p.m. in game one of the Stanley Cup Final. Can't even believe I'm saying that, but I am so thrilled that we have arrived at the Stanley Cup Final this year. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, some fun IndyCar news, some talk around a Formula One team and how they will go about finding their drivers next year, and a NASCAR on the track for the final round of their – or for the final race of their opening round of the playoffs. So we'll talk about that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, not as much action going on the track this weekend. The IMSA Sports Car Series is off this weekend. IndyCar is off this weekend, as is Formula One and Formula Two. And then, of course, Formula E season is done for the year, which leaves NASCAR as the lone major racing league that is taking part this weekend here in the U.S. And they have their final race of the first round of the playoffs, which happens at Bristol, which is probably, I mean, it's one of my favorite tracks, period, there, in terms of tracks that NASCAR races on. But I love short track racing. I love the banked ovals that Bristol have, so I'm looking forward to that race. We've had three races so far at Bristol this season. The ninth official race of the season, the Food City, presents the Supermarket Heroes 500. That was at Bristol. That was won by Brad Keselowski. The other two races that have taken part are taking place at Bristol: the NASCAR All-Star Open and the NASCAR All-Star Race. So the All-Star Open was won by Matt DiBenedetto. The All-Star Race was won by Chase Elliott. So we have those two. So Keselowski, DiBenedetto, and Elliott have been the three winners at Bristol this year. And all three of those guys are competing in the playoffs. Now, Brad Keselowski, with his win, is already through, along with Kevin Harvick. We know that Denny Hamlin, on points, has advanced to the next round. So the top three are essentially locked in to the round of 12, or to the second round, whatever you want to call it. But that now leaves 13 drivers to battle for 9 spots. And Matt DiBenedetto could really use another win at Bristol this weekend, as he sits 15th, 25 points back from the cut line. So currently, William Byron sits in 13th. That's the first elimination position. Cole Custer in 14th, DiBenedetto in 15th, and then Ryan Blaney there in 16th. Now, William Byron and Cole Custer, a little bit closer to that battle, with Byron just 3 points below the cut line, Custer just 8 points. So they don't necessarily have to go out there and win. But if you're Matt DiBenedetto, you have an idea of what it takes to go out there and win on this track this season, having done that already. And, it could very well happen again this weekend. So looking forward to that. Chase Elliott, the other man that's gotten a win on Bristol this year, sitting in seventh place right now. He is 28 points ahead of the cut line. So he is in a nice, you know, more of a comfortable position than some of these guys heading into it. But I think this is going to be a fun race. I'm looking forward to it. I think, you know, it's going to be a competitive one, as short track always is. There's going to be a lot of contact. I think that's what I like most about short track racing. When you get onto other, you know, oval tracks, there aren't, you know, contact is, again, like most racing, kind of frowned upon. When you get onto short track racing, hey, contact is just part of it. You know, you don't have a whole lot of space. What, you know, the one lap around Bristol is half a mile. So it's not like you have a ton of room to really, you know, avoid other drivers. I think that's what I like about the extra challenge of short track racing. Not only do you have to go through a whole NASCAR race, but you also have to mind your manners there and kind of you know, be aware of all that's going on around you on such a short and intense track like Bristol. So I'm looking forward to that race this weekend. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Going to be interested to see exactly, you know, who gets that upper hand. It would be a great win if DiBenedetto could come through and get that second win at Bristol. It would save him from going home and give somebody else some major heartbreak in that playoff field. But looking forward to that race, and hopefully it does, you know, deliver and give us a fun final race to that first round of the playoffs. So looking forward to that. Of course, the second round of the NASCAR playoffs have some more just incredibly fun tracks: Vegas, Talladega, and then the Charlotte Roval, which I'm such a fan of that race. I'm such a fan of the way they built that circuit there in Charlotte. So I love the fact that that's continuing to be a playoff race, and can't wait for that, especially at the end of the round of 12 this time. Should be a lot of fun there. But NASCAR on the track this weekend with that final race of the first round in Bristol. So looking forward to that. Also, some IndyCar news. IndyCar has announced next season they will be introducing the Music City Grand Prix. It'll be a race that goes down in Nashville. It'll happen on the weekend of August 6th to the 8th. So August 8th will be the first Music City Grand Prix. But this looks like just an incredibly fun racetrack. It goes around kind of the downtown area. It has a section of the track that goes by Nissan Stadium, which is the Tennessee Titans stadium there. They also go over a bridge, a nice long bridge. Got two nice long straight, well, not necessarily, it's kind of like the bent straightaway that you sometimes see at a Formula One track, or if you ever watch the Portland International Raceway, kind of that long bent, you know, it's kind of like that slightly curved straightaway. Kind of same thing with these two long straightaways that go over the bridge for this Music City Grand Prix. But I think this is going to be a lot of fun reading about it. It seems to be a very wide track, especially on the start line where the race, you know, begins. They come down off that bridge, and it's just a huge, you know, nice long open straightaway. If you ever watched some of those old Cleveland Grand Prix, those races that would happen at the Cleveland airport that IndyCar used to have, that opening start where they would just have a wide open runway. You could go, you know, 5-6 cars wide as they were heading into that turn. It's going to be that kind of space on the start for Music City Grand Prix. And I'm just really excited about it. I mean, the way that Nashville has really come, you know, kind of into its own as a sports city. It had the NFL draft there a few years ago. Also a few years ago when the Nashville Predators were in the Stanley Cup final. I want to say it was 2017 when that happened. You know, Nashville really got to show its passion for hockey, which was a lot of fun to see. So Nashville seems to be a town or a city that continues to grow in this kind of sporting landscape. So the fact that they can welcome in IndyCar and have really as fun as a circuit as it looks. I mean, I urge you to go online and check out the course, because it really is kind of a tale of two different sections of this track. You have kind of the downtown section. It's a little more obviously wide open, but again, just a couple series of some left-handers with some nice straightaways in between. A little bit of a chicane before they get back onto that long straightaway back over the bridge for the first time. And again, seems like a little bit of a tighter section there as they get over the bridge before coming back over the bridge closer to downtown. So, I mean, this is just going to be, I think, a really fun race and a really fun city and a really exciting environment for IndyCar and looking forward to it and seeing how that plays out next year. But ultimately, very, very excited to see that news. And just, again, thinking about IndyCar's season next year, just excited to obviously maybe hopefully get back to a little bit more of normalcy with the schedule. And if we can have a new race in Nashville, provide some extra excitement for next season, I am all for that. So that'll be fun again with the weekend of August 6th to the 8th next year is when that race will happen. August 8th will be the actual race day. But looking forward to that next August in 2021. And then in some Formula One news, obviously, you know, as we get into the second half of the season, now is about the time when we start to hear about driver movements or driver announcements. And that was kind of the weird thing was we've known a fair amount of driver announcements really since the start of the season. I mean, before we even had the first Grand Prix, we knew that Carlos Sainz was taking over for Sebastian Vettel at Ferrari. That then led to Ricciardo being confirmed for McLaren for next season. So we've already had a fair amount of driver announcements for next year, which is usually when now is when we usually start to hear about that. You know, obviously, the big announcement of Fernando Alonso as well, coming back to Renault. So we already have a couple of driver announcements for this season, but one team that's attracting some attention is Haas. And Haas, the American team that uses Ferrari engines, really uses a lot, I think, Ferrari engines and the Ferrari gearbox. But they haven't announced either driver for next year, and they seem to not always be on the same page with the two drivers they have now. So they have the Dane, Kevin Magnussen, who is driving one of their cars, as well as the Frenchman, Romain Grosjean, who has been there since Haas became Haas. He has been with that team. Kevin Magnussen came in on the second year. So this is a team that has not announced its two drivers yet. And they, like I said, they haven't necessarily always been on the same page with their two drivers. In fact, the last couple years, because they made some really good improvements in 2017, but 2018 and 19 kind of regressed. And especially last year, you could hear a lot of tense radio conversation going on between the team and their drivers. And in some cases, Günther Steiner, who is the team principal, had to come on essentially just say, hey, enough. We get it. You're frustrated. We're frustrated too. Nothing you're saying is helping. So it doesn't sound as though Haas is, too eager to get these two drivers back. And so with that, there were some options. I mean, they are, again, partnering up with Ferrari. They've been a huge kind of sister team to Ferrari, and they have had a lot of great young drivers right now coming through Formula 2. Obviously, Mick Schumacher, Callum Ilott, Robert Schwartzman, all currently first, second, and fourth in Formula 2 standings. So those could be some exciting options for Haas moving forward. So that could be something they do. Sergio Perez, Nico Hülkenberg, also two very experienced drivers who are looking for an opportunity next year in Formula 1. So that'll be an interesting team where Haas tends to go, because that seems to be a driver lineup that seems very stable, that now is looking, you know, a little more uncertain moving forward than it has been in the past. So some interesting conversations around Haas in that sense, but looking forward to the announcement hopefully coming about who they'll have on their team next season. Also, don't forget, probably the endurance race that goes on every calendar year, the 24 Hours of Le Mans. It's probably the most notable endurance race, one of the most notable races, period, happens. Well, it starts tomorrow. Starts on Saturday, ends on Sunday. But again, weren't sure if we were going to get this race. We are getting it. It's one of the great races on planet Earth. You can check it out. I believe it starts at 5:30 a.m. here on our on the West Coast. Tomorrow it'll go till 5:30 a.m. on Sunday. But it's always fun to watch those type of races and just to go to sleep and wake up with the same race still going. That's quite the sensation. That's true. But it is Friday, and that means we have our pal Saxman Rick Metz.
Saxman's in the house, baby.
Coming up in the next segment, so we'll get to see what's on his mind And I mean, it's yeah. I was gonna say we can't even really try to predict that. But we will get to talk to him after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Welcome back inside the studio here. It is Friday. It is the second hour, which means the sax man Rick Metz is back in studio.
The sax man cometh, baby. Here I am.
Here you are.
I am here.
Happy Friday.
Have no fear. Happy Friday to you, brother. How you doing?
Oh, I'm always doing great when you're here in studio.
I always have a good time, too. Thank you for always having me in. Oh, I always appreciate it. Fun game last night on Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, that was the most intrigued I've ever been by a Cincinnati versus Cleveland game.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Intrigued.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. It was fascinating.
Yes, it was.
I enjoyed seeing, you know, the kid Joe Burrow and then, you know, Baker Mayfield and the Browns look better than they did last week because they were blown up.
Oh, yeah.
But let's get right into a couple of things I want to bring up here.
The floor is yours, my man.
Really? I've been on the floor a few times.
Yeah, I know.
In case you missed it, I want to send out major love to John Daly, who's currently battling cancer.
Wow.
The great John Daly, golfer extraordinaire, the big man himself. Sending out love to John Daly. Let's hope that he can fight this off and keep his health.
Absolutely.
Just wanted to send that out, sending love. Also, in case you missed it, the Kung Fu Panda. Pablo Sandoval, 2012 World Series MVP for the San Francisco Giants, was waived. They waived him last week.
Bye-bye.
But he was just signed to a minor league contract by the Atlanta Braves, and we'll see how that all pans out. He was batting .220 this year with a .546 OPS. Not too good for the Kung Fu Panda, but he's always been quite the fun player.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and we'll hope that he can get his game back together and maybe do something and help out the Atlanta Braves, and I hope they need the help.
I'll never forget that 2012, the game one of that first World Series when he hit three home runs off Justin Verlander.
Yeah, that was stunning.
That was quite the performance.
That was definitely stunning. And speaking of my New York Mets,
yes.
In case you missed it, billionaire Steve Cohen just bought the majority share of the Mets. He's been a minority owner since 2012, and I'm so glad that he bought out the current management, current ownership. I'm good to that.
Yeah, we don't have to.
It's been how do I put this succinctly?
I was going to say, remember, we have FCC regulations.
Yeah, airworthy, yeah. Let's just say that I'm very happy that the old ownership is out. I was not happy with them at all.
All right.
And I'm very very anxious to see exactly what he's going to do and how he's going to put the Mets back on the right footing ownership-wise.
Are you bummed at all that A-Rod and J-Lo did not get the deal done?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that it might have been a lot of fun, you know. I mean, A-Rod is definitely quite the celebrity in New York, and J-Lo's quite the celebrity worldwide.
Yes.
Now, you got to say A-Rod's a celebrity worldwide as well.
Yeah.
But by the same token, it's like, okay, let's see if they can make it happen. If they do, good. If they don't, okay. Know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I gotcha.
Exactly.
I gotcha.
Exactly. Exactly. So, in case you missed it, let's talk AFL. We haven't done it in a couple of weeks.
We haven't.
Throwing in a couple of little tidbits here and there. But the Australian Football League Premiership is coming into its final week of their season. They'll have a week off before they start their playoffs. And it's going to be interesting. The final eight have pretty well been set. It really doesn't look like there's going to be any change whatsoever. It's definitely sticking where it's at. You've got Port Adelaide at number one. The Brisbane Lions at number two. West Coast Eagles coming in at number three. Richmond Tigers, who I follow quite heavily, are number four. The Geelong Cats are number five. St. Kilda is at number six. Collingwood is at number seven, and the Western Bulldogs coming in at number eight. That top eight is not going to change, but there's a chance of seeding changes within that top eight, depending on games this coming well, this weekend, actually. You know, last week, I got to watch quite the interesting game between the number 4 Richmond Tigers and the number 5 Geelong Cats. Richmond won the game 57-31. Low score for a premiership game.
If you're not familiar, AFL teams usually break that 100 mark, or
they
at least get close to it.
There was some major defensive work going on. Score at halftime, 23-10 Richmond. 10 points by the Geelong Cats, 1 goal, 4 behinds, their lowest point total since 1957.
Yeah, that is low.
Oddly enough, against the very same Richmond Tigers.
Isn't it weird how that happens?
Isn't that strange how that happens? And then the third quarter score was also very low, and it was Geelong's lowest point total since 1976.
Whoa.
Yeah, 57-31. Richmond propelled themselves back up into fourth place on the top 8 on the ladder, and Geelong got knocked down to fifth. So we're looking at some interesting games for this weekend. St. Kilda beat the Great Western Sydney Giants today. Well, last night. You got to realize
they're
on the other side of the world.
They're in Aussie.
St. Kilda crushed GWS Giants 82-30. That's big right
there.
That
is.
And St. Kilda kind of cemented their place and cemented their sixth place standing, although it's still up in the air with Collingwood playing tonight. We've got, Collingwood is going to be playing. Where is it right here? I got it right here. Yeah,
We got it here.
Collingwood is actually playing on Monday against the number 1 Port Adelaide. So that's going to be interesting. Doesn't look like Port Adelaide is going to have to worry too much about their seeding, but that really depends on what happens with the Brisbane Lions and if Port Adelaide, you know, can stick in there at number 1. Because Brisbane is playing tonight against Carlton, and Carlton is sitting at number 12, not done too well this year on the ladder, and Brisbane has a very important game. If they win, and Port Adelaide loses, Brisbane could take over the number 1 seed.
There you go.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting set of matches this weekend. We have Essendon versus Melbourne. That's 13 versus 9. Doesn't matter what's going to be happening with that one. You've got the Adelaide Crows coming in at number 18 on the ladder versus the number 4 Richmond Tigers. Richmond, with a projected win over this, could propel themselves up the ladder, depending on, of course, what happens around them. Brisbane, as I said, is taking on the Carlton Blues, number 2 versus number 12. You've got the Hawthorn Hawks versus the Gold Coast Suns coming up tomorrow. That's going to be an interesting game. Even though it's 16 versus 14, they always have a heated rivalry.
Ooh, all right.
And you've got the Sydney Swans sitting at number 15, taking on the Geelong Cats, who are sitting at number 5. That game could affect the seeding too, but Geelong is expected to win. Sydney has not played well at all this year. Fremantle is taking on the Western Bulldogs, number 11 versus number 8. Western could possibly improve their standings on the ladder from number 8. As I said, it all really depends on what's going on, you know. And you've got Collingwood and Port Adelaide going on Monday, number 7 versus number 1. So that ought to be an interesting game too. You know, if Collingwood wins, you know, they could even change their seating in the ladder as well. It's going to be a great weekend of premiership football. There is a game on this evening on one of the ESPNs. I believe it's on ESPN2.
All right.
And it's coming on late tonight. So if you want to watch some AFL premiership football, one of the most amazing sports in the world, as I have been touting for many years, you know, I always love talking about AFL.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's going to be some AFL football on tonight. Watch it. If you haven't watched any AFL yet out there, you need to watch this.
Yeah, give it a try. And looking at this top 8, two teams that are undefeated in their last 5 matches.
Yeah.
Talking again about those Brisbane Lions, then Richmond coming off 5 straight victories at least.
Exactly. Richmond has been playing some good footy.
Oh, yeah.
Good footy. You know, there's been some nice streaks going on. It's been an odd season, like it is in any professional sport.
Yes.
All across the world. They're still, if you weren't aware, they're still playing shortened quarters instead of the usual 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. They're only playing 16-minute quarters. And it's been quite interesting. But the last game I watched from this last week from Geelong and Richmond, there were fans in the stands.
Yeah.
It was great. They were socially distanced.
All right.
But there was a fair amount of fans in the stands. Of course, Australia has done their best to keep this under control and, you know, stepped up, for lack of a better phrase, stepped up to the plate and really hit it out of the park.
There you go.
By working really hard and their citizens working to control this virus.
What'd you think of the 6,000 in attendance last night for Cleveland and Cincinnati?
I thought that was kind of interesting as well. It looked like everybody was following the rules.
Yeah, for the most part.
You know, as long as we everybody stays considerate and exhibits common courtesy towards their fellow human being, we're going to be able to get more people in the stands. We're going to be able to go to games. Although I won't be able to go to the game on Monday.
I'm sorry.
I had it all set up. I was going to see the very first home game in the Death Star.
I was going to say.
Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas, the Saints versus the Raiders.
What a game to have to open up your new season or your new stadium.
But with no fans.
But with no fans.
I know. I was supposed
to
be there. I had
it
all set up to have tickets.
Yep.
I'm just like, you know, oh, gosh, they're going to start out the stadium, and this will be the first time in 25 years I haven't been to a home opener.
Wow.
25 years.
That's incredible.
I know.
That's a great run.
I know. Oakland, baby.
There you go.
Oakland. It'll always be the Oakland Raiders or just the Raiders.
Just the Raiders. There you go.
We just happen to be in Las Vegas right
now.
It's going to be a good game. Michael Thomas is on injured reserve, so we don't have to worry about his threat at wide receiver. Emmanuel Sanders is dinged up a little bit, too. So that's going to alleviate a little bit of concern for us. And we'll just have to see how we can contain Alvin Kamara.
Terry was with our conversation earlier on in the first hour there. He was thinking it was going to be more of a shootout. Would you agree with that? Or do you think it's going to be a little more tamed?
Yeah, you know, the defense for the Saints is a good squad, and the Raiders defense proved that they can play pretty well. They did give up 30 points to Carolina. But, you know, Carolina does have an explosive offense this week with Bridgewater and McCaffrey.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll have to see. There's a few injuries to take into consideration. We'll see if our big right tackle, Trent Brown, is going to be able to come back and play. And we've got some people dinged up that have practice this week, but nobody knows the extent of their injuries.
Yeah.
But nobody ever knows the extent of whatever injuries are going on.
You never know how much truth you're actually getting when you talk about injuries.
They're on the injured list. So what does that matter? Come on, man. We don't exactly know what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
So it's going to be a really fun game. I'm really looking forward to it. There's only one thing I can add to that. Go Raiders! Raiders!
Is there any other game that stands out to you this week? I mean, we got some interesting matchups. Is there any other games that stand out?
There's going to be some interesting matchups this weekend. Nothing really jumped off the schedule at me, but I'm definitely looking forward to seeing the Seattle-New England game.
Yeah, I was going to say Sunday Night Football should be interesting.
That's going to be a fun one. Let's see if Cam can be Cam again. And, you know, let's see if Russell Wilson says, hey, Cam, I was here first. Watch how it's done.
I was going to say, I mean, I always love when you get two quarterbacks that are great runners going up against each other, but they can also sling it from the pocket. I mean,
exactly.
That's the quarterback that is in the NFL now, and you got two guys that can really do it.
That's the prototype of the future.
That's
the NFL quarterback prototype right there, and Russell Wilson is one of the originators of that. The smaller size guy, you know, that can run and pass. And then you've got Cam, who's like kind of like the bigger size guy that could do that as well. He's more like the Randall Cunningham, Michael Vick mold from back in the day. And Russell Wilson kind of started this new, hey, I'm a little smaller, but I can do all that too.
I was going to say, I think what I like about Russell Wilson, what I like about Kyler Murray, what I like about Baker Mayfield is guys that aren't your typical tall quarterbacks, but they can still make plays that you need stars to make. And that's Lamar Jackson, too, being a little undersized, but being out there and making incredible plays.
Exactly.
It's a lot of fun.
Anxious to see how the Ravens do. Anxious to see what the Falcons are going to pull off this week.
Yeah.
You know, they looked good last week. Let's see how that pans out. Curious to see if the Niners can rebound.
They're going to be without George Kittle on the East Coast.
Yep, that's going to be interesting. You know, and West Coast teams, notoriously aren't as good on the East Coast, but you know, with all the travel restrictions and everything going on and everything they have to handle,
yeah,
it's just that much tougher this season. You know, travel isn't exactly the easiest thing to do right now.
It is not for anybody.
Without a doubt. That's for sure. That's
well,
for sure.
Rick, I mean, as always, man, thank you so much for coming in here. It's always fun to have you here on Friday.
It's my pleasure. AFL tonight, baby.
That's right.
Watch AFL on ESPN. I think it's on ESPN, too.
Do
watch
not miss out.
The match tonight, or you will be missing out. I said so.
There you go. Listen to him. He knows what he's talking about.
The Sax Man knows his stuff, baby.
He is the Sax Man, Rick Metz. Thank you very much, Rick. You have a great weekend.
Always
man.
A pleasure. You do the same, buddy. Take care. Happy weekend, everybody.
We'll be back to close out the show here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Welcome back inside the studio here as we wrap up this show on this Friday, September 18th. Big thank you to our pal Terry. Big thank you to our pal, the Sax Man, Rick Metz, for being in here and talking to me today. I want to remind everybody, we don't have football or hockey tonight, but we do have basketball. Game 1 of the NBA Western Conference Finals goes down at 6 o'clock. And you can catch that game right here on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. We'll have pregame starting at 5:30 here on ESPN Radio, so be sure to tune into that. Game tips at 6 o'clock. Then tomorrow, the East Finals will have its Game 3. That'll tip off at 5:30. And also, the puck drops for Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final tomorrow as well at 4:30. So be sure to catch some of that. A lot of fun playoff action. Then, of course, it's NFL Week 2 on Sunday. Can't believe it's already. I mean, my gosh, you're already into Week 2 already. One game in. Crazy. But looking forward to that. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the sports. Be safe out there. Watch out for each other. And I will talk to you guys on Monday. Peace.